Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, it's the 50-50 Football Show with me, Rob Gutman, standing in for Neil Atkinson this week. He's away in Las Vegas. He's having a good time and he's missing the business end of the season. Well, some of it anyway. And I'm joined today by Mo Stewart, Sam Walkerdine and Adam Smith, and a host of guests on the phone. We're going to be talking later on to Rebecca Knight about Chelsea, to Asan about Man City, and we're going to be talking to Steve Goldsmith about what's gone so horribly wrong at Sunderland. It's what Alex Ferguson called squeaky bum time, Mo, which I really despise that expression. But it's about the business end of the season, about the dash for Champions League places now, and about the death throes of the relegation fight. We'll be looking at all three aspects. We're going to start with the title race. There's no better place to start. And it's Chelsea and Spurs, Mo, bookending the weekend's programme. Spurs playing West Ham on the Friday night. Mm-hmm. Chelsea then getting a chance to pick up the mantle again on the Monday night. How are you seeing this title race? I mean, Spurs just won't let it go, will they?
They won't let it go, no. They'll fight to the end and they'll keep Chelsea honest, let's say. But the reality is I'm finding it very hard to see Chelsea dropping any more points between now and the end of the season, which means that as good as Tottenham have been and probably will continue to be, it won't be enough.
Sam, you're an Arsenal fan. Mm. We were talking about this before, so I'm going to put you on the spot. You're meant to hate Chelsea and Spurs more so. Do you give a fuck? who wins the league?
Who wins the league?
Yeah.
No. Right. Weirdly, I think I don't know whether this is allowed to go out. I feel like I'd almost prefer it if Tottenham did.
Well, it's one of these crazy Arsenal fans you hear about.
Yeah, I like
because you don't live near enough of them.
Maybe, yeah. I think that's my. I haven't really experienced that many Tottenham fans, so maybe that's why. Being a northern Arsenal fan, I suppose. I like what they're playing. I like Pochettino. I like their fullbacks, and Chelsea are just annoying. Like, they just annoy me. Everything annoys me about them. They're just annoying.
That's a fair summary, but I think Rebecca Knight, who we'll be speaking to, is a Chelsea fan, might have some disagreement on this one.
She's annoyed with a lot of them still, to be honest with you.
Right. Yes, yes, I'm sure Rebecca has strong views. Well, John, can you see any way that Chelsea can yet mess this up? I mean, they're three at home, one away in this running, more or less.
Yeah, it's a nice run, and it's about as nice as it gets for Chelsea, really, in terms of for the title challenge. I mean, Tottenham have won 9 in a row, which is incredible, and just like they're going to push it right to the wire. But I think this is one of those strange weekends, and I mentioned this to Rebecca when we chatted. This is one of those strange weekends where I think actually playing second helps, because Tottenham will probably beat West Ham because they win games at the moment to put the pressure on. But I think Middlesbrough are going to be down by Monday, and I think that, you know, will take the wind out of any team's sails. So I think Middlesbrough showed great fight against Manchester City and showed like they had, you know, a lot more fighting than the Sunderland have. But I think if, you know, Hull and Swansea are likely to, at least one of them, send Middlesbrough down by Monday. And I think that means that the Chelsea's game being on a Monday night really helps them.
Adam Smith, Spurs are more resilient now, I feel, than in yesteryear, certainly than last season when they had a reasonable go at the title. They were patient, they waited for their moment to beat Arsenal and then to finish Arsenal off last week. They've had moments earlier in the season, like when they were roundly beaten at Anfield, but they still picked themselves up off the ropes. And that may be the last time they didn't pick up full points, I'm not sure. Do you see them hanging in, or do you see title nerves taking effect? Will they win their last, how many is it have they got now, 4?
I can see something a little bit weird happening, like Chelsea losing and then Spurs losing. Like, it feels just a little bit like there's one more twist to come, or Chelsea losing and Spurs still missing out by 2 points or 3 points.
I feared you were going to say there's one more twist to come. People say that, it really is.
Well, you say there really is, but I think you can have a twist that doesn't mean anything. So, like, take, you know, take us beating United at Old Trafford, you know, in 08-09. That was a, you know, that was a massive twist, and it turned out not to mean anything, really. And United lost, what was it, 2 on the bounce after that or something, you know, and it turned out to be irrelevant. Like, so there could be a twist in so much as Chelsea lose, but it means nothing in the end because they still win the title race. That's sort of what I mean. I think I can't see Chelsea with Conte's history of knowing how to get teams to win titles, as he did with Juventus in Italy. I can't see him, you know, not getting them over the line. But Spurs have been really impressive this season. I mean, you know, they have. Like, I was on a show maybe in September or something like that, and I said something on the lines of, I'm not worried about Spurs. And what I meant was, if we're involved in the title race, I won't be worried about Spurs because that means, you know, we're involved in the title race and I can't see them being that. But they've proved me wrong this season. I really thought they'd do what they've kind of done repeatedly for the past few years of get around the 70-point mark, and, you know, that'd be it. And sometimes that's enough to come second, and sometimes it's enough to get into the top four. But they've been brilliant. You know, you can't take away from what Pochettino's done with them. Do I think that they can win the title? No, I can't see Chelsea dropping 2 games worth of points between now and the end of the season, really.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? I'm looking at the fixtures in front of me now. Chelsea have got Borough at home, Watford at home, and Sunderland at home, and then they're away to West Brom. I think if you're a Spurs fan, you're looking away to West Brom, think they might just draw that. But then Spurs have got to beat Arsenal, United, and a couple of other games. It's not going to happen, is it?
Spurs, I mean, at this stage of the season, we always kind of try to look at who's got something to play for in your opponents. And Spurs have got more opponents with stuff to play for. I mean, West Ham are kind of playing for their manager's life, to be honest with you. Hull City is still playing for their premiership survival. But for me, the more important thing is that Chelsea aren't playing anyone who's played a good game of football in about a month. I mean, Middlesbrough, yes, they did spark a little bit against Manchester City, but I think, as we'll hear later on, it was probably a little bit more to do with Manchester City, really, than Middlesbrough. But you look at Watford, you look at Sunderland and West Brom, they haven't put it together in a long time, and Chelsea probably won't even have any problems with them.
OK, well, let's hear a Chelsea fan perspective. Let's hear from Rebecca Knight, who was talking to John out and about earlier today.
And now we're joined by Rebecca Knight, who's always a delight to talk to on Chelsea, and I'm sure especially at the moment. So last time we spoke, Rebecca, we had you in the studio, and it was a bit of a sliding doors moment. We were talking about what might happen in the Spurs game, and then if they did lose to Spurs, what that might do to the league campaign. And we all in the room predicted, including yourself, a Spurs victory. And what actually happened is that Chelsea won, and they've won every league game since, and everything's looking rosy.
Yeah, it is, and it's a bit of a turnaround, isn't it? I think against Everton, I was surprised how well they did, for sure. I think Lukaku was essentially completely out of the game, which obviously made a huge difference.
Yeah.
But yeah, the FA Cup win, I think, was one of those points where you'd look back, and even though it wasn't a league game, it's sort of a season-defining moment, if that makes sense. I think everybody kind of looked at that and thought, oh, okay, it was just a blip. Chelsea are you know, going to see this through kind of thing. And I think for Spurs, well, it was a moment where they were like, we were very on top at one point, which we should have probably ended up winning, and when we didn't, and it looks like we, you know, battered them from the final scoreline, which for periods of the game certainly wasn't the case.
No, certainly not. I mean, it was an impressive win against Everton, who were obviously a good team, and to go there and be patient and then get the 3-0. And I think a lot of things that Chelsea have done over the last few weeks have been the kind of things that title winners do. Basically, he's rotated the squad a little bit, but different players have come to the party and performed, and in key times, Chelsea have just seemed to keep their cool and have belief in their teammates and what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we've spoken about a few times, of the Fabregas-Willian. And obviously in the FA Cup, we saw Willian basically win the game. Willian was the kind of star man. And then when you go to the league game and you look at, like, Cesc Fabregas' contribution,
yeah.
And then you see that he's got, you know, 10 assists, which is the most of any Chelsea player, but then he's barely played a game. And then obviously Pedro's goal, which before that point, it kind of was quite even and it could have, you know, a goal for Everton, people could have got very nervous. But the Pedro wonder goal, and then you're looking through the team and you're thinking, it isn't just Eden Hazard. And obviously with the way Costa's gone so far off the boil, these players have had to do things and step up. And, you know, thankfully, and I really do mean that, thankfully they have and they can.
It's interesting with Costa, Rebecca, because he seems to have done all of his work early on in the season, but he's still getting the game time in the minutes. I'm not assuming sure Conte is expecting him to produce in the same way he was, but Batshuayi's still not getting a chance. That's kind of interesting to me.
No, I mean, I think he completely has no faith whatsoever in Batshuayi, and I feel terribly sorry for him because, you know, it's like we've seen when he's had chances and the very few chances he's had, it's almost like he feels under such pressure to do things and score and produce, you know, a Cristiano Ronaldo semi-final of the Champions League performance. And, I mean, one, he doesn't have that ability, bless his heart. And two, it's just not fair to expect anybody to do that. You
it's
know,
kind of like Robbie Keane syndrome.
Young. He is very young as well. And I think confidence-wise, it's knocked him. He's funnier on Twitter than he's good on the pitch. You know, I think he's come to the Premier League and he's found his social media level, but in terms of playing level, like he needs to go to West Ham or something and build his confidence back and, you know, hopefully we'll not do a Lukaku and we'll put a buyback and sell him for us, you know, in his contract if he leaves. But I think when you look at Costa after that row with Conte and after his head was turned by China, I don't really think we've ever got him back mentally, if that makes sense. I think he very much looks like a player who thinks he's off in the summer and isn't that sad about it either, actually.
Well, I mean, I suppose he can look back on his Chelsea record with pride. He's won 2 league titles. He scored lots of goals. I mean, he's the kind of person who will probably forget all of the negative stuff out of his mind once he's left. But yeah, it doesn't seem like he's really... you're right. He very much looks like he's on the beach already. The interesting thing for me, though, is that do you think with Batshuayi, do you think it'll end up being a full sale or maybe just a loan to like a West Ham type club?
I think either has to happen. I don't really care, to be honest. Like, he's one of those players. He's kind of like, you know, when we had Kedgman and it was like, oh, please just leave. Like, I am fed up of you looking upset and people being like, oh, that's fine. At the end of the day, he's obviously doing something in training that Conte is not liking as well, because I really cannot see a scenario why he wouldn't have at least got a few chances otherwise. Mm-hmm. Whether it is that Conte genuinely does just think he's too young and stuff, but then if that is the case, why is he here? Why did he last past January? You know, because clearly Conte would rather play a false nine or use Costa, who in the nicest way at times is literally like having no player. But it's like, you know, we speak about Costa's record and how good it is, and it fully is. It's incredible. But if you think he's basically done very little for the second half of this season, and he had a year off last year as well. So theoretically, what is an incredible record could be even better.
Yeah, he's done like 50% of his time.
Even better.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the difference between the youth and experience in particular, because I wanted to talk to you about the other end of the pitch. Well, obviously with John Terry, he's going to be leaving, but then you've got the likes of Zouma and Ake. Now, it's plainly clear to anyone that David Luiz needs a bit of a break. Now, who would you like to see out of those three come in for him?
To be honest, like, I think when you look at the entire back four, I think they all look like they need a break. David Luiz looks like he's playing on empty. Marcus Alonso looks like he's still got whatever flu he claimed to have. Like, that was not a 24-hour bug, judging by the state of him. So I think, yeah, we almost certainly should be bringing in Aki. And then Zouma hasn't had the chances either. It's almost like a Varane at Real Madrid kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And until Zidane is forced to play him, he doesn't get a game. But he's excellent, and Zouma is the same. I know, obviously, Zouma is coming back from a big injury as well. And I think, you know, everybody's kind of acutely aware of that. But it's been a long time now. I don't think anybody now is believing the whole I don't want to rush him back rhetoric from Conte, because I think it's quite clear now he just doesn't really fancy playing him.
It's an interesting weekend in terms of how the fixtures fall this weekend, I think, Rebecca, because obviously Spurs play first, so there's a chance that they could only be 1 point off Chelsea come Monday, which puts a little bit of a pressure on. But also you've got Middlesbrough, who could be down by then, and that's, you know, it'll be a tough one for them if they have to watch the... And I imagine they will actually be down by Monday, because I imagine other results will at least go a little bit against them. And so, you know, how do you see that playing out in terms of this funny kind of way of how the fixtures run?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's always a psychological thing, isn't it? And I know I heard Pochettino be asked before the North London Derby, you know, Chelsea have obviously won, how do you feel? And he trots out the rhetoric, and I'm sure Conte will in his press conference. We don't mind, we're focusing on our own game, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we've all heard it a billion times, haven't we? We'll almost certainly do that. But of course it has an impact. Of course the players will be looking and thinking, oh, 1 point, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we looked at Borough against City. Who thought they were going to do that, you know?
Yeah, amazing performance.
But then I think a really important thing that everybody needs to remember is Chelsea's last game is Sunderland, and Sunderland are gone. Sunderland are useless anyway. We'll watch them cost you the title. Now, I've said this, but, you know, Sunderland aren't doing anything anyway. So I think that's 3 points, and if Chelsea then win one and draw the last two of their home games, it's fine. So I think, you know, when people say, oh, win your three home games, I don't even think that's completely necessary. It should happen, but I don't think it is imperative, because, again, the final day of the season, Spurs aren't going to go in the final day of the season, even if they need, like, 3 points or a point, they could theoretically win the league. They're going to be thinking, will Chelsea have those 3 points? Because it is Sunderland,
yeah.
I think that's massive.
Yeah, it is massive. It's quite a nice one for Chelsea, and I think it looks like they are going to do it. So I'm not going to quite say congratulations now, Rebecca, but I'm sure. I don't know. We'll do you a small open top bus parade at the end of the season, 50-50 style, if you fancy it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Great stuff. Okay, huge thanks to Rebecca. And
thanks to Rebecca there. Always good to hear from her. We're going to turn now to the race for the Champions League. Places 3 and 4 in the table. The first, we're going to focus on City versus Palace, Arsenal, Man U and Liverpool, Southampton. It's going to be any two from perming any two from four, it seems like now. In fact, there are no other permutations. Mo, City were in the box seat for third place. They messed up against Borough last week, and Liverpool's win at Watford changes things now. They both, if Liverpool win 3 and City win 4, it'll come down to goal difference, but City have got to win that extra match now. It feels like it's turning into a sort of strange season for Guardiola, a very disappointing season.
Well, in a lot of ways, yes, because obviously it's the first time he's not won a trophy. There's a very real possible stalemate. Finish out of the Champions League, and even if they do finish fourth, which personally I think is probably more likely at this stage, they're going to have the qualifier to deal with, which could be either a very good team, but it's certainly going to be an inopportune moment during the beginning of the season. But I think Pep's playing a bit of a long-term game here for me. I mean, a lot of the changes we're seeing, they seem nonsensical to us, but I get the impression he's trying to build up like a back catalogue of ideas and systems that he can potentially pick and choose at later on. So, in some ways, his first season's probably best being viewed after his second season, if that makes sense. Because once the things that he's kind
of... Yeah, context of evolution.
Yeah, the things he's set in seed here, if they haven't worked by then they just haven't worked. Whereas I've got a funny feeling that some of the things that he's putting in place this year might actually bear fruit in a year's time.
Well, we're going to talk to City fan Hassan in a minute, but before we turn to that question, Adam, I'm a bit of a Man City nemesis person in a way, because I don't easily buy these narratives of, yeah, it's part of a process, part of an evolution. The process of the evolution that I'm most talking about is going to involve them spending about 300 million again in the summer, or wages akin to that, that might as well akin to that effect. I can't help. I just look at this in fairly black and white terms at the moment, and I'll be shot down by Guardiola fans, I'm sure. But this is his weakest showing as a top level manager, and this is the first time he's come into a competitive league. I do think nice guy as he is, talented guy as he is, I do think he is due some criticism.
Oh, I think that's true. I definitely think that there's some criticism there, but I think it's very difficult, because it's very tricky to separate a conversation about Manchester City without talking about the money that they've got available to them to spend. So
it's not going away, that money, is it?
No, you know, that it doesn't look like it, you know, but that's the thing is, you know, I think as a Liverpool fan, I'm used to people saying about Klopp, you know, that he didn't, you know, he'd never seen anything the likes of like West Brom before. You know, that took him by surprise. What, you know, you don't get that in Germany. It's not those sorts of teams don't exist basically in Germany. But that's also true of Guardiola. Now, just because he's got millions of pounds available to him doesn't mean that he's, you know, knows what players he will need to take on a Stoke or a West Brom or a you know, team like that. I was going to say Everton then, but that was just, it's not true. It was just for the lols. So it's tricky because, yes, you've got little sympathy for him because the money he's got available to him. But at the same time, like a lot of foreign managers who come into the league, he doesn't, you know, he didn't necessarily know what he was going to face. I do think that it's just very difficult, isn't it? Because it's very tempting to say he's been found out. But has he been found? Like, is that true that he's been found out? He's just a good manager who hasn't been in a league as competitive as this before, and he hasn't settled into it immediately like a lot of people thought were going to happen. I didn't think he was going to, you know, when the season started and I was looking at predictions, I thought Liverpool would finish higher than Manchester City because Klopp's had longer to get used to the league than Guardiola has. Does that mean, you know, that he's had a poor season? No, it was about the season I thought he was going to have, which is why I agree with Mo that actually next season will be interesting. Yes, he's got to spend the 300 million or whatever, but he's got to spend it right.
Okay, I want to go over to the interview John did earlier today with Asan from the 93-20 Man City podcast and his views on Guardiola, City and the Palace game.
And our friend Asan Naeem from the 93-20 pod, I nearly got that wrong. You've changed the name, it's not my fault. but fantastic stuff. How's the pod going, first of all? How's the new style working for you?
Amazing, man. The support has been unbelievable. I mean, obviously, we were the City Watch podcast for nearly 2 years,
yeah.
And then we kind of decided to branch out on our own, and the nice thing has been the support of basically everybody within the kind of football City community, the social media community. They've just been really, really supportive, so no, it's been wonderful.
Great stuff. I did listen to the last one. I didn't get through it all because it was 90 minutes. but I did a good first half, I'll say, Asan. And there was the stuff from the Middlesbrough game coming out was sort of a bit dark, really, because I thought from a Middlesbrough, I watched the game, I thought Middlesbrough played really well. But obviously, you know, you're looking at it from a City point of view. And there was a bit of talk. Was it Pep's worst day?
Yes. Yes, I think it was. I raised that question because I think that, I don't know what he was trying to achieve, is the honest answer, because if the idea was, well, I want to play Jesus and Aguero together, he'd already said 6 months ago, Jesus can play from wide left, so why have we suddenly gone back to three at the back? Why are we playing Clichy and Navas as wing-backs when they can't cross? I don't know, it was weird. It was a really weird kind of... It was a very Pep thing to do, to take a game like that and just throw a proper curveball in. But I think that's the thing for top coaches and managers. You can get away with things like that when they work. And when they don't work, you look a fool. And I think that's the issue that for... Not just for me, for a lot of Blues, they kind of walked away from that game, particularly knowing that United had dropped points that weekend already. It was just a bit like, that's pathetic. The team selection's pathetic. The fact that Sterling and Sane are on the bench is pathetic. The fact that 4 minutes into the second half, they're both coming on, we're changing shape for like the fourth time in the game. It just, it was too much. So it was definitely Pep's worst day. And don't get me wrong, I'm a massive Pep fanboy. So for me to say that, it must have been bad.
Do you think part of it is the fact that he doesn't seem to have been learning? Like, I mean, a lot of the time when a new manager goes in, he might do a bit of rotation, a bit of chopping and changing with systems and stuff, trying to work out what his best team is, the best formation. But when you get a game like Middlesbrough, where, like you say, you've made three or four changes just to style and personnel within the hour, you're sitting there as a fan thinking, well, has he learned anything yet? Are we still doing the same things we were doing in September?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair question. I'm not convinced that it's a case of Guardiola not learning. I think that it's more a case that he's had two choices all season, which is that he's known that he's not got the personnel to execute what it is that he wants to do from a footballing perspective. Tactically, what he wanted to achieve, he's not necessarily got all the players to do that. So the entire season has been a question of, what do you do? Do you make a system that suits the players that you've got to try and get the best results that you can this season? Or do you almost toss this season off on the basis that, well, I'm going to use it as a learning curve for the players that are going to be here next season? And I think that it's more a case of that for me, rather than him not learning about that. I've seen a few people say, oh yeah, he's underestimating teams. And I'm like, well, no, because he did that at Bayern. He did it at Barca. It's not a quest. Pep's always had this thing where he's very obsessive about the idea that every game is different, and therefore I have to have a plan for every game, and I will change my team for every game. And that's in his nature. That's not going to change. People saying that, he's going to have to change next season. No, he'll just have better players next season.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, that's probably the reason why he hasn't decided to adapt his game to suit the players he's got, because he knows he's not going to have them for longer than the end of the season, and that half of them are going to be leaving.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's really interesting, for example, that there's talk that Kyle Walker's coming. Now suddenly there's talk that maybe Alderweireld is coming. I think that's interesting because 4 months ago, Pep effectively said Spurs play the closest thing to the positional system that I play. Hmm. And suddenly we're looking at, two of their defenders. It just doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and I guess it's a case of, well, you talk about practicalities and things, and I think he's maybe thought, well, is it more important that I adapt to the players I don't want, or is it more important I teach the players that I do want exactly how I want to play? Because he doesn't kind of want to be wasting time next season.
Exactly, Gibbo. That's basically what... And you know what? To be honest, I think that you listen to the first half of that podcast, you could probably hear the disappointment and the upset. But I think the reality is that if somebody had given us a reality check at the start of the season, then we'd have probably known, look, with the back four that we currently have, with the fullbacks that we currently have, as soon as Gundogan went down injured and was out for the rest of the season, it just left so many holes that it was unrealistic to expect that we could mount a title challenge and also mount a challenge to win the Champions League. So I think that, maybe we've had that reality check now this season. But in terms of moving into next season, it doesn't concern me because, as I say, I think that the key thing, and this will be the same for, I think, City and Liverpool more than any of the clubs in the top six, we have to get our recruitment right this summer because we've got holes in our squad, and the types of holes that if you fill them with the right players, next season will be the best two teams in the league by a country mile. But you get them wrong and we'll fall even further behind the more pragmatic teams in the league, if that makes sense.
Yeah. In terms of recruitment, it'll obviously help if you're in the Champions League, not quite there yet. The games you've got towards between now and the end of the season look reasonably nice. You've got these three home games, first of all, before an away game at Watford. But this Palace one is just looking more and more difficult, isn't it? The way the weeks go, they keep beating teams at the top of the table. They look more dangerous away from home than they do at home. And knowing what Sam Allardyce is like, he'll be pumped up to try and kind of do a number on Pep Guardiola so he can tell everyone how brilliant he is after.
Mate, can I swear?
Go on.
I'm shitting myself. Really. I mean, Fat Salmon is ticky-tacky ways. I mean, I can smell what's coming. But I think, look, beyond that, we've got to be honest, they've got the spine of a very good side there. I mean, Sacco's obviously done really well, even though he's injured. Kabay's a very good player. Benteke's obviously a top forward. Zaha's having the season of his career. I mean, it's a moment for them suddenly. They've got good players and they've got a little bit of momentum. So, yeah, I mean, I expect it to be an incredibly, incredibly difficult game. Having said that, like Guardiola said, if we don't win the three home games that are left, these players don't deserve to play in the Champions League next season. That simple. So in terms of, everybody knows what we know what we've got to do, and if they don't do it, it'll be ugly. I suspect that there's question marks over maybe two or three within the squad, and I think that these next three games are really, really big games, because I think that we need to, by hook or by crook, pick up the 3 points in each game, get to that Watford game, having qualified for the Champions League, with a game to spare to make everybody feel better about the season as a whole. Because if it goes to the last game of the season, again, I don't want to be overly negative, but don't fancy us going to Watford. If we've got to go to Watford and get a win on the last day of the season,
yeah.
The way that some of our lot have performed, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, they were certainly physical.
I'd say regarding the... I'm not going to ask you to make predictions about the team because none of us really want to have a headache trying to second-guess Pep Guardiola. But would you say with Aguero looking like he's going to miss out and Silva looking like he might be back, is missing Aguero more of a blow than Silva is a boost, or which one are you more concerned about?
Well, I think that having Jesus back kind of mitigates the Aguero thing, because I think that the way that he kind of began his City career, we feel confident that he can lead the line. So I think that having Silva back is way more important than missing Aguero, if that makes sense, because the team dies when David Silva doesn't play. And that is, yeah, I mean, it's, again, something that we absolutely will have to address this summer, the fact that this lot don't know how to play without David Silva. And David Silva's 31 going on 32 years old. He's not going to be there forever. So, again, it needs to be addressed. But, yeah, for this weekend, I expect that it'll be... I expect Silva will come back in. I expect Sterling and Sane will come back in. Mm-hmm. Jesus will lead the line. And then, you know, it's just, again... It's a question of, does he play KDB and Silva and Torre at the base of the midfield, or does he go for something a little bit more solid where he plays Fernandinho and Torre as a kind of two, and then one of KDB or Sterling miss out? I mean, I think those are the key decisions that he's got to make before the Palace game. And to be honest, even whilst I'm talking to you now, it's going to be Fernandinho and Torre, because I don't think that he's going to... Yeah, I think that he's shown a type of pragmatism in the last 4 weeks. And he's even said it himself that, you know, to be a little bit more secure, he's decided to play with the kind of double pivot as opposed to the single pivot. So, yeah, I think it'll be Fernandinho and Torre, and then the question of whether Rasmus is out or De Bruyne misses out, I don't know.
Yeah, because I mean, it's kind of looking like no Aguero for the rest of the season, which is obviously a blow, but kind of does solve a few problems kind of elsewhere in terms of the balance of the attack and things like that. I mean, it's Jesus and then the guys behind, isn't it? Probably for the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if the Aguero injury is a season-ending injury, I mean, I don't think that they've confirmed that yet.
No.
So I don't know, but if it is, then it will. You know, Jesus will lead the line. And to be honest with you, I probably wouldn't say this on our podcast because I get loads of stick when I say it. But I suspect that privately, that's going to suit Guardiola down to the ground to now have a situation where he gets to play Jesus for the last four games of the season without having to worry about, is Aguero on the bench? Do I have to fit him in? Because my feeling is that, again, if Jesus performs in the next four games, as he did in the four games before he picked up the injury when he joined the club, then makes the decision on Aguero, if a big offer comes in this summer, a lot easier.
I think it's interesting as well, because I think the thing, looking from the outside for me, that impressed me most about Jesus wasn't even just him. It was how the trident of him, Sané and Sterling worked together. And that's going to obviously have knock-on effects to the rest of the makeup of the midfield. I think for City, as much as the defence and the attack seem to draw all of the attention, for me, the makeup of your midfield next season is going to be paramount to where you finish. Because when Gundogan comes back, if he's going to be looking to go pair him and Fernandinho together, that gives more solidity. But then the way that Silva and De Bruyne have operated together in midfield has also been good. So it's going to be really interesting to see which one of those two setups becomes the number one choice.
Absolutely. I think the biggest decision that they've got to make this summer isn't the full-backs and the centre-half. It's how do you replace Yaya Toure? Mm-hmm. Can we go out and find in the European marketplace a pivot type player who is good enough to play that position in a Guardiola side that plays with really high lines. Because it's kind of that thing that, you know, for that system to work, I believe, for it to work perfectly, you need somebody almost of the quality of Toni Kroos, because without that passing ability, without at the base of the midfield having the ability to move the ball 40, 50 yards and change the play quickly, you're really, really susceptible. I mean, you're susceptible to counterattacks anyway when you play with such a high line, you play with just the one pivot. But then on top of that, if the guy hasn't got the ability to switch the play, it's complicated. And I think that's the big difference between... I think that's why Fernandinho, not so much lost his place, but that's why for a period in time that midfield was Torre, Silva and De Bruyne, because it was perfectly balanced in an attacking sense because of Torre's passing ability. And I think that if they can find a player who's got the ability of Torre in terms of the passing, but has got legs to run with, basically, then, yeah, I think that's the biggest kind of hole that they have to fill in the squad. Because I think fullbacks, in a way, it is what it is. Do you know what I mean? You need to go out and they need to go out and sign a right back and a left back, and they'll do that. And those positions are important. But for me, the Torre position is way more important.
Okay, I'm just going to put you on the spot, Hassan, to finish and ask you for a prediction on how many points you'll get between now and the end of the season and where that'll mean you'll finish. I mean, you don't have to get it right, but, you know, have a go.
I don't think that, to be honest, I think we'll probably get 9 or 10 points.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What, there's 4 games left, yeah?
Yeah.
12 points, so yeah. So I think we will get 9 or 10 points. Because actually, to be honest, I think what's probably going to happen is we're going to end up dropping points against Palace and then winning 3 on the bounce.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it might well happen. And what do you think that'll be good enough for? Third, fourth, or do you think you might miss out on that?
We're not catching you, but United aren't finishing above us, and neither are Arsenal. We'll finish in fourth.
Fourth, there we are.
Yeah,
okay.
I'll sign up for that.
I will all sign up for that in the room. Okay, huge thanks to us, and do check out the podcast, 9320. Loads of really good guys involved in that, doing some good stuff, so check out what they're saying over at City. But in the meantime, we'll go back to Rob and the guys.
Great to hear from Hassan there. John, it was interesting how he talked about this not really being Guardiola's team yet, which, you know, at odds with the views perhaps we were talking about beforehand about whether he's allowed this evolutionary time. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's interesting to think of comparisons with other managers. You look at Mourinho and look at Klopp, and they, you know, Klopp's in his first full season. He's had a little bit longer and he's had more transfer windows and things like that. Actually, it's only one more January, isn't it, really? But, you know, had longer with the team and Mourinho, and I think those guys are being a bit more pragmatic, and I think we're not really kind of, we're seeing them at the moment thinking, well, it's all about results at the moment. It's all about just getting to the summer with as many points as possible, whatever happens, and then I'll worry about things like style of play in the summer. And they seem to kind of be doing that a little bit more than Guardiola. Is Guardiola doesn't know, this is how I play, this is what I want to do, and I want to teach the players who are here how I want to play. And if I go completely away from that, that'll set me further back in terms of where I want to get to. It's a dangerous ploy, because if they don't get top four, then he's going to be criticised, and I think fairly. I know, I understand what Adam's saying before Hassan about maybe realistic expectations, and expectations were a bit too wild because of the name coming in. But, you know, if Man City don't get top four, I don't care what manager, you know, it is. It's a bad kind of turn of events, because you look at what, you know, the quality of the squad and things like that, and the money they've had available. So it's a risk for him, Guardiola, really, and it's a little bit of a risky game he's playing, because I think they will get there. I think they'll just about stumble over the line. But if they don't, then, you know, this £300 million we keep saying he's got to spend in the summer, he might find that a little bit more difficult to spend than he imagined.
Mo, managers love the work in progress narrative, don't they? I don't know any one singular who doesn't say he hasn't got all his players yet in the first season. Are you buying it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you're right, it is a very convenient excuse a lot of the time for managers, but I think the thing in this situation is that it is true that it's patently clear that Pep Guardiola hasn't got the kind of players to do the kind of jobs he looks for, and that he had in Bayern Munich and Barcelona. The issue I have with it is that he is new to the league, but he had a long time to plan. They knew he was coming. He knew he was coming for a long time. They knew what kind of a manager he was. They knew what kind of players he wanted. And no one went out and got them.
Yeah, and that's a really good shout, actually, because there was a lot of talk that Guardiola was buying the players when he was still buying Munich manager. And exactly. So, you know.
It is a good shout, that. And it's perfectly logical to say he still needs to evolve the team. But we talked about this before the show, Mo. His front options, he has world-class level players like De Bruyne, Silva, young potential world-class players like Sane and Sterling, Jesus and Aguero. It's ridiculous. I mean, of course it's not a strong behind, but that is as good a front sixes or four or five as anyone could want.
Do we really need to talk about what happens if you've got a really good attack and terrible defence and how close you can get to winning the league?
But hang on. Our attack had players who didn't have that. You're talking about the Liverpool attack of 13-14.
Yes,
from a Liverpool-centric point of view. But yeah, Liverpool ended up that season having an attack, which with hindsight, you go Sturridge, Sterling, Suarez, Coutinho. But they didn't have, not even Suarez had the pedigree he went on to have at that stage. Pep starts this season. I'm going to get Asan emailing me or asking me on Twitter about this. But Pep starts this season with a plethora of riches. No one, you know, those City lads, those defenders weren't bought cheaply. As John said, he had the opportunity, the year before to have got the lads in again. Asan says he needs to be perfect in the transfer market. We are, you know, Liverpool fans have said this before, but 300 million.
He needs to be perfect simply because he knows that his most keen areas that need fixing, goalkeeper, fullback and defensive central midfield, are the same ones that a lot of other teams want as well. So they're all going to be fighting.
He fixed keeper in the summer, he thought.
Well, if he genuinely thinks Claudio Bravo is going to win in the league, then best of luck, honestly. So I think he's going to be looking for those again. I think in reality, though, the thing with Manchester City at the moment is that they haven't really proven to us that they know where they're going in the next year. I think the transfer market will be key to that, to see exactly the kind of players that they go for, how successful they are in going for them, and going forward from there.
Adam, am I over-harshing on City and Pep?
To an extent, I think. I just think that he is the sort of manager and they have the sort of money available that means that if they're in the same situation next year, that's when big questions can be asked. But this year, I think you've also got to remember they've had injury problems to some of the players that they did bring in. Was it Gudogan or Gudogan?
Gudogan, that's the best man, one
whatever.
I've heard.
I don't know how you say it, but whatever. He was out for, is he still out? I don't even know. But, you know, so he picked up a big injury, didn't he? And he was one of the key signings of the summer.
Jesus got injured at a really bad time.
At a really bad time. Aguero's done his usual thing of, you know, in out like the hokey cokey,
scoring 30 goals.
Well, yeah, exactly. Done exactly what he normally does. But so I think, you know, there are what we love to refer to as mitigating circumstances to what's happened at City. If they don't finish top four, that's when really big questions can be asked. But I would be surprised if they didn't. From where they are right now, I think, you know, Liverpool don't really feel like they can be caught with maybe one more win, and I'd be surprised if Manchester City with another win or two feel like they can be caught as well.
I think if they don't finish top four, he should be taken through Manchester on the back of one of those open flatbed wagons with his arms tied behind his back.
Well, one more thing I'll say on the subject, especially regarding the discrepancy between attack and defence. Right, analogy time. This is a beautiful table here. We've hired hundreds of millions of pounds worth of chefs to make us an absolute feast sitting here before us, yeah? Anything you could possibly ever want cooked to perfection. The table is made of paper. We're still going to be eating on the floor.
I thought your metaphor was some seagulls floating. Oh, no. Chapel. I was looking for some shit in there.
But I
like it.
Putting this shit on the floor.
Okay.
And they'll be tasting it at the same time as this gorgeous food. The point I'm making is that if you've only got a part of the jigsaw right, it's still not working jigsaw.
Still no jigsaw.
No, okay. There's still holes.
All right. Sam, do you want to talk about your namesake, Sam Allardyce, and the job he's doing at Crystal Palace?
Sure.
Go ahead. fill your boots. Do you think they can... Asan was very pessimistic in the way that we fans can be facing home bankers about City's prospects at home to Palace. Would you fret for Man City? Do you think Sam's got something up his sleeve here?
I like Palace. I don't know why. I think because I like Ian Wright. And so, therefore, I like Crystal Palace. And
That's all football fans need.
I like that. You remember when they played in the FA Cup against Man United and I thought that kit was cool? And I tried to make it out of paper that evening with my mum's help.
How old were you? 22?
Yeah.
Oh, stop it.
I think they've got a bit of momentum behind them. I don't see why they can't cause an upset. You know, I think that they've got that. I don't know. They've just got a bit of weight. And I can imagine them just bulldozing their way through to a horrible 1-0 or something like that.
Adam, that momentum which Sam talks about slightly lost with their defeat against Burnley last week.
Did forget about that, actually.
I wasn't hinting at that.
Momentum against the big teams.
Yeah.
No.
But you know what I mean. General momentum, rather than just losing all the time.
Sam stressed me before. Nothing too specific, Rob.
Yeah.
Nothing that involves facts, figures, knowledge.
Yeah.
None of that crap. Sorry, Sam. Adam.
Yes.
With your finger on the pulse of all Crystal Palace's results, you'll know that Burnley beat them on their own at Palace 2-0 last week.
Yes, when Alan Pardew was manager.
I'm literally wasting my own time here. Sod it, let's not even talk about
Palace. Go on, what are you going to say?
do you think that takes something away from their potential result against City? Or do you think this is the sort of fixture, because it's City, because it's Pep, that Sam, as was suggested, I think, by John in the interview, that Sam gets up for this one and he gets his players up for it, even though they've got actually nothing to play for?
I think perhaps more than that, one of the key things is that a lot of the problems that City have are similar to problems that Liverpool have, and therefore he can go there with essentially the same game plan that he used at Anfield and say, it worked then, why can't it work now? And depending on how how it starts, I think before the Liverpool Palace game, a lot of people were saying, they're the sort of team that if we get one or two goals, that'll be it. They'll just pack it in. We got the one, we didn't get the two, and our defence fell apart. You could see that happening to City. Like I wouldn't be, if I watched Match of the Day last, on Sunday night, whenever it is, and Gudoingen has made it onto the pitch and completely fallen apart. I wouldn't be shocked if somebody said to me, "Oh, Palace have won 2-1 or drawn 2-2 or something like that," because that's the sort of weaknesses that City have got that you were talking about before. That's part of what they haven't done under Guardiola is get the players in that can deal with those big teams, the alehouse teams.
We shall see. Let's turn to the game of the day. They used to say once upon a time before the game happened over the course of 4 or 5 days. Certainly, it's a key one in the race for the Champions League places. Arsenal at home to Man U. I'll start with you, Mo. It's got to that stage where a draw looks useless to both teams. Wenger likes a win. Mourinho likes a draw. What's going to happen?
Well, I think they're both going to revert to type very much so. The only potentially surprising thing I see is I think that Arsenal are going to be keen not to lose a physical battle, because one of the things that they have in their kind of semi-mini improvement over the last few games, that has one thing that stood out. They have been able to be more physical and go toe-to-toe. And I think that the way that Man United have been playing, more pragmatic game, is going to demand that. I think, obviously, Fellaini's not playing, so that does take a little bit out of that.
Is Pogba likely to be out still?
No, I think Pogba's actually all right for tonight.
We're recording this just before the semi-final.
Indeed, so folks. Yes, the Europa League game. So unless he breaks down within that game, then I think he'll be okay. Personally, I see this as a narrow Arsenal victory. I think that this is going to be one of those games where the Arsenal players are going to be able to say finally that we've won a game for the manager, because I don't think that they've got it in them to get into the top four. Sorry, Sam. I don't know why I'm looking at you while I'm saying all this. I don't think they've got it in to get the top four. I very much doubt that they're going to win the FA Cup final. So I think one big rousing win against an old foe is going to be enough to prove to the populace that they still care about him. And then Monday morning, out comes the announcement. Two new year contract, Fast and Furious.
Well, I'm going to turn to talk to Sam Walkerdyne, spokesman for the Arsenal Nation here, Sam. It's a really strange phase in the life of being an Arsenal fan. I think this. I can't. Yeah, I'm trying to think back in my decades of supporting Liverpool to think if I can imagine such a thing. It feels like a funeral march to some degree. There's still great uncertainty as to whether he'll stay or go. There's great uncertainty among the fans as to whether they want him to stay or go. And yet, there's some things to look forward to here. Quietly, a cup final, qualifying for Europe. It's no small matter. How are you seeing it? Are you excited? Are you depressed? What's the Arsenal barometer or thermometer at the moment?
Yeah, I feel like the whole season, pretty much, I've just been in this weird turmoil of going back and forth and not being totally confused with what I want and what I like. And do you know what I mean?
It's who
like
you are?
Yeah, I know I am. You know,
I had that in my teenage years.
Yeah. It's like Wenger in or Wenger out. Like, that's been dragging on. Then it's, you know, and then it's like, what about the board? What about the owner? Are we doing well? Who should stay? Who should go? And it's been now I feel like I don't even know which way is up now, because I was I was on the bus this morning and I read the football, and on the back it said, Mourinho's going to play a weakened team against Arsenal. And I was like, great, that means we're going to win. And then a second later I was like, no, that means we're going to lose. And I was just like, oh, God. And like, you know, I just thought, that's how I feel. It is, it's so conflicting all the time. I mean, especially the Wenger thing. And why he hasn't come out and said what is going on, I don't know. And that's only fueling it. He should just say what's happening. I think that would really help things one way or the other.
It'd help focus everyone, I think. You know, yeah. if he is signed a 2-year contract, I think the protests sort of had to stop, don't they? Because, you know, well, what's the point? And I think it'd focus everyone. And if he's leaving, they're sort of, I remember when Benitez did that at Chelsea. He basically said, look, I'm leaving. You've all got, you know, your own way now. Can we try and win this Europa League? And everyone went, yeah, all right, then he did. Yeah. And it sort of helped that, didn't it? And it was sort of quite clever by Rafa, really. He was like, you can all stop moaning. I'm going anyway. I'm going in the summer. Let's just be nice until I leave. And so kind of either way, you feel like it'd help Arsenal in terms of getting some, because they still can get something out of this season. You know, there's an FA Cup final for pity's sake.
If he did decide to leave, if he announced that he was leaving, and then I think it would make that FA Cup final even more special.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It would be what a moment that would be for Arsenal fans, whether you wanted him out or not. I think the consensus generally is that you respect the man and you appreciate what he's done for the club over the years. And I think, you know, if you could show, even though he's leaving, if you could show that somehow, and, you know, at a cup final with all the gusto, that'd be amazing. But if you just don't know, what a shame it would be is if after that he was like, oh yeah, I'm leaving, by the way, bye.
Can you ask you about that psychology amongst the fans? Obviously, it is in all seriousness, it's difficult to talk for all of your fans. I get you're a big Wenger fan, we've talked about this, and you would see him go with heavy heart, and for you, you'd love to see that. But there's a lot of Arsenal fans who are so keen to see him go. I don't know what the percentages would be, but it's a significant percentage. You're so keen to see him go. And I know what it's like when supporter bodies get in that frame of mind. All the love dies. They're focused on getting rid, and everything that came before. They'll look back on that in 5 years' time and go, God bless him. But now they're almost at the verge of hatred.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if they could even enjoy a cup final, even if he says he was going. Maybe the relief would be enough.
Yeah, I think it would. I think
to unite everyone.
I think that's one of the big frustrations is no one knows what's happening, and it's starting to like now. Bleed into the board a little bit. People are saying, well, where is the chief executive? Why isn't he letting us know what's going on? What is the chairman doing? You know what I mean? Who's this an American chairman? You know, where is he? Why isn't he making, where are the decisions that are being made? You know, whether in fact that it's not all on Wenger. It is, you know, people are like, oh, actually, they're really quiet and they're not doing anything. Maybe it's them as well as Wenger, you know? So it's, I don't know, I feel like that if he decided, I think people could get behind him.
John, this is an interesting point, this. I think there's football clubs have to grow up a bit. They have to realise they can't behave maybe the way they would have done 20 years ago, where we're keeping it in-house, you'll get to know when you get to know. They're very public organisations. It's show business. They're living in the public eye. You can't treat your public like that, Arsenal Football Club. They do have to inform the fans, don't they?
I don't think they have to, but I just think they should in terms of what's best for the football club for the rest of the season. And I think it's an unwise thing to just say, oh, we'll just kind of keep it from everyone. It feels like they're trying to hide bad news, and you think, well, you know, it's gonna hit the roost sooner or later. And maybe they think, well, if they can wait till the end of the season, by the start of the season, everyone will have calmed down again if we buy a really good player, if we manage to get another Özil or something. And it's just, I think, it's just a risky strategy to play, really. And unless it's just Wenger, unless it's Wenger saying, oh, you know, I don't want us to talk about it until then, I'm leaving and I don't want to announce it. And then they've just sort of got to play by his wishes, really, because he's been such a huge part of the football club that if he says, look, well, I'll go, but I don't, you know, we'll announce it at the end of the season, that, you know, it's a possibility that that's happened, and they've just gone, well, he's Arsene Wenger, so, you know, we'll do what he wants.
If the fans, the pundits, the Arsenal world, the football world are this confused, that the players can't be in a happy place, Mo?
No, you're right. I think for the players, it is something that will be playing on their mind, regardless of what they say. I've got a few theories on why it's taken so long, though. One thing that has been mentioned in the past is a lot of the Arsenal players, their contract renewals have been tied into whether or not he's staying or not. So whether the board are trying to do some wranglings behind the scenes to secure them before announcing that maybe he isn't staying, then that might explain the delay. Flip side to that, there's been also a lot of talk about bringing in someone else as a director or to do some of the jobs he's been doing now as a kind of way of kind of evolution rather than revolution. And maybe those deals are still in the pipeline and haven't been finalised yet. Those are the only two real reasons I can think of why they've delayed it. Because John's right, it's just making it harder for everyone at the moment, this indecision.
Adam, at this key moment in Arsene Wenger's Arsenal career and in the life of Arsenal Football Club, enter Jose Mourinho, and he likes pissing on people's chips. a lot of how he approaches the game could be affected by the game that will have passed by the time people hear this, their semi-final against Celta Vigo. He's not going to just let Arsenal win this game and play a Mickey Mouse team, is he?
No, and he particularly likes pissing on Wenger's chips and exactly. Then accusing Wenger of watching him piss. exactly like Sam said before, when I heard, you know, oh, Mourinho said he's going to play a weakened team, I thought, oh, shit. Because actually, that's the worst thing, because then, you know, Mourinho playing a weakened team is when he's fine saying, you know, to the most attacking player, you're going to be an auxiliary right back because, you know, they're kind of squad players and all that sort of stuff. And as a Liverpool fan, I know exactly what happens when there's an important game and Mourinho decides to play a slightly weakened team. He can still get a result out of you. I think that it will be really interesting to see what happens in the Europa League for United. I can see them beating Arsenal. Actually, I can, because it just feels like the joy has gone out of Arsenal at the moment, just kind of across the board, and whatever the reason there is an argument, obviously, that the anti-Wenger brigade would say that the players have stopped playing for him and that he's lost, you know, he's lost the dressing room. The pro-Wenger people might say, well, actually, it's all of the negativity surrounding the club that's caused the players to kind of drop out a little bit. But it's just felt like one of those seasons for Arsenal where there just hasn't been much joy in it at all, which is really weird when you think that they've got to an FA Cup final, and yet they've done that amidst an air of protest, amidst the air of, and I feel sorry for Wenger, actually. You know, there's been times when I've looked at him and thought, all the man wants is what's best for Arsenal Football Club. You know, that whatever else you might think of him, all he wants is what's best for the club. And he's being treated like he's some sort of sex offender or something by certain parts of the Arsenal fan base. It's just weird, you know. The abuse that he's getting and things is just madness. Into that walks Jose Mourinho, swirling his, you know, comments around his head and is
pissing, sort of
pissing, yeah. Pissing all over
eating
the chips
like Theresa May.
Exactly, yeah. You know, so I think it's exactly the game that Wenger probably doesn't want right now, actually. I think what he could have done with was a decent win, like a good win, maybe, you know, beating Tottenham or getting a 4-0 against one of the lower sides, then playing Mourinho. But right now, kind of coming off the back of losing to Tottenham, all the protests, basically, barring some sort of miracle, all they've really got to look forward to now is the FA Cup final. It feels like exactly the game he doesn't want is to go up against a Mourinho's a belligerent little git. you know.
Okay. The third game in the race for the top 3-4 places is Liverpool Southampton. Sam, Liverpool quietly, I think is the word, quietly have established themselves in something of the box seat, cliches abiding, for third place. It feels like all the top six have been involved in all kinds of turmoil, excitement, rollercoaster rides all season. Chelsea have had this incredible year. Spurs are taking them to the wire. United have had this emotional journey in the cups. Guardiola's all kinds of strains, and Arsenal. We don't need to continue on. Would it be fair to say Liverpool have quietly done their business, having threatened to be a title challenger, faded a bit. They're getting there.
Yeah, I think so. I think it seems like because I was reading an article the other day about Virgil van Dijk and whether he might leave Southampton and maybe go to Liverpool. And I was thinking about that, and I was like, yeah, I can see why you would want to go to Liverpool. It feels like a team who's like solid, who's on the right path, you know, and doing well. Obviously, at the beginning of the season, it was really, you know, there was a lot of kind of title aspirations, and I think the fact that that's faded away is by no means a bad, you know, it's not, it doesn't mean that the season has gone badly for Liverpool, I don't think. It seems like they're really on track. However, I've got a question for you.
Go ahead.
And it's when Klopp started, didn't he say, give me 4 years?
Yeah, well, that's another one of those work in progress type of things.
And so this is, next season will be...
He's had a year and a half now. At the end of the season, he's had a season and 2/3.
Okay. So I just want, like, do you think there's any kind of... Do you feel like you're building up to something? Or does it, you know...
Yes. I mean, if you'd asked me that question in November, when Liverpool were, I think, top of the league, I'd have said, wow, we're ahead of schedule here. Yeah. It had been an exciting first 2/3 of a season where we got to the Europa final and played some good teams on the way. We got to the League Cup final only to be beaten on penalties. A shitty finish in the league in eighth, but it'd been an interesting sort of part season. But heading for a title challenge in the first year where we thought Champions League would be a bit tough to get, that seemed like progress. If Liverpool do finish third, and a fairly comfortable third, or even fourth, it feels like very solid progress. John, turn to you. You're a Liverpool supporter.
I am.
You're very much a Liverpool supporter. You've been to every single Liverpool game this season, I think. Yeah. Is that right?
That is correct.
So, yeah, you're a qualified man here. It's progress, isn't it? Whatever happens now, unless Liverpool sort of lose the next three and finish outside the top four, everyone's going to be very buoyant going into next season from a Red point of view.
Yeah, it's progress, and it's progress in terms of league points won, and it's progress in terms of what we've seen on the football pitch at its best. There's obviously been times when we've been frustrated, and the squad has ultimately ended up not quite deep enough. He took a bit of gamble with that, the manager, and it hasn't quite paid off. So there's obvious things to fix, and I think that's quite a nice thing to think about as a football fan as well. You know, I think the manager and fans will be as one in terms of what Liverpool need to do in the summer in terms of particular positions they need to recruit in. Yes, he needs to then go and get them in, but it feels like there's an obvious way that how Liverpool get another 10 points next season than this. And I think for other clubs who are around us, I think they might feel that their problems are tougher to fix. You know, they might feel like the problems are a bit more spread out, or players that improved them. Even for someone like Tottenham, that, you know, if they don't win the league this season, they might be thinking, well, what is it we need to do? Is it, you know, who do you get to kind of improve Tottenham? And so it can even be a difficult one even for them. For Liverpool, I think it is progress, and I think it's obvious how we can do better as well. So we're actually in a nice position in terms of growth, I feel. And Mo is nodding, and that'll always do for me.
Well, Mo, I mean, I'm talking as if Liverpool have qualified for the Champions League. I mean, the bookies make Liverpool, I think at the started today, yesterday, I think 2-7 on, and the likes of United and Arsenal are quite far outside. But Liverpool are still, to a degree, injury ravaged. No Henderson, no Mane, who's been the player of the season. Other niggles and doubts. This isn't the full fat version of Liverpool at the moment. And Southampton are dogged opponents. Liverpool can't take 3 points for granted here, and that could change things.
They certainly cannot. I mean, for starters, when was the last time we really saw the full fat Liverpool? I mean, do we really know what it actually officially is at this point?
I think around the times of beating Arsenal and Everton, and Arsenal and Tottenham 2 months ago.
But essentially, we've had to do a bit of a make-do amend. It's been a bit of a sticking plaster into the season. But what we have shown is a bit of desire, a bit of grit to tough it out and get those tough results. Now, Southampton, I mean, you said earlier you think that they might be a bit on the beach. Southampton are never going to be on the beach against Liverpool. While we've got Adam Lallana and Dejan Lovren, they are never going to be on the beach.
And Klein.
Well, I put those two in a different bracket because they're the ones that I think the Southampton fans reserve their hatred for. I think they're kind of ambivalent to Klein, to be honest. So if those two are playing, and I suspect they will both be playing. But we've not scored against them yet. Our much vaunted great attacking verve has we've drawn three blanks against Southampton. That's going to be the biggest thing to change for me on Sunday. But talking about the Champions League, if we do beat Southampton and Arsenal beat Man United, we only need one more win.
Yeah,
out of the two.
So and Liverpool have Borough at home and West Ham away.
Yeah, those are two games which I feel a lot more comfortable about our ability to win. Now, talking in the more broader terms and progress and what have you. I agree with John that having obvious fixes is a better place to be than maybe looking around thinking, well, where is that extra percent?
Mm.
But we still got to get it. We still got to get them in, essentially. And I don't think we've seen the best of Klopp's Liverpool, but we've seen enough flashes to make me think that when we get to see the best, we can potentially sustain something really good.
Adam, are you confident or nervous about Southampton on Sunday? Do you think, Mo's right, Liverpool haven't scored against Southampton this season. They've played them in a League Cup semi-final double header, so this will be the fourth meeting of the sides. Liverpool, although thereabouts joint top scorers in the Premier League this season, but the goals have dried up. The great games have been closer recently, a few 1-0s, a 2-1 here or there. It's not a banker, this, is it?
No, it's not. I'm concerned about it. I think we're going to get top four. I think that is not nailed on, but I think it's as close as you can get. It's not just the bookies that think that; it's the statisticians. It's everybody, you know, who look at it. We're something like 56% to get third, compared to Manchester City's 34% or something like that. So we are definitely in the right place to get top four. And whilst we might lose to Southampton, I don't know where this brilliant run of form that Manchester United or Arsenal are putting together is coming from. Because United might be unbeaten for 25 games, but they've drawn like 23 of them or something. So it's irrelevant. I am concerned because not just because Southampton won't be on the beach against us, but because I can't remember the last time a team was on the beach against us. I really can't remember. Everybody, for some reason, teams seem to hate us, whether it's because of a residual
they get
thing.
Off,
from
they put
the
towel around themselves,
80s.
They get off that beach,
they
have
do,
an ice cream,
like, you know,
and turn
teams
up.
Do against us for some reason seem to just turn in, you know, like Champions League performances when we go up against them, when they're on the beach the rest of the time. It's mental. But that's neither here nor there. I don't think they'll be on the beach. I do think it's going to be a game that we might struggle with, partially because of the mental block, because we have played them three times and not scored against them. But we battered them at St Mary's in the league. Absolutely, like, we can't forget we trolled. Like, we could have scored five or six.
98% possession.
I think so. They just had goal kicks. But we, you know, we did. We were so much the better team that a 5 or 6 goal lead wouldn't have flattered us. But we didn't. We just didn't score. We didn't do the bit of putting the ball in the back of the net. Which, you know, fine, okay. And I think that we're at that point where we're dogging out results now. I'm concerned about how our supporters will be if it's, you know, 0-0 or 1-0 down with, you know, half an hour, 20 minutes to go. I'm concerned about how Anfield will be, because I think everybody feels like we've got to win all three of our games now. I don't think we do. I think if we win two of the three, we still get top four. I think if we win one and draw one and lose one, we'll still get top four. And I think, you know, Borough is as close to a banker as you get in football. They're not on the beach, they're just shite. So, like, I think that's as close to what we can hope for as possible, really. So I'm worried, I'm concerned about Sunday, but if we do not win, I'm not thinking, well, that's it, we've blown our season, what are we up to, what a waste of time.
Okay, well, talking of shit and being in it, we're sliding all the way down the league to look at the relegation picture. And John caught up with Steve Goldsmith talking about his beloved Sunderland and what went.
And now we're joined by Steve Goldsmith, Wise Men Say podcast. Steve, it's looked pretty bleak for a while, but kind of now it's finally happened. And what must frustrate you, and I know what's really frustrating you guys because I listened to your pod on it, was just the kind of manner of the relegation, really. It's such a limp way to go down.
Yeah, it's a surrender, isn't it? Are you guys going to come and check back in on me next season?
We really want to, mate. It'd be nice to speak to you after you've won a few.
Yeah, well, you know, there's no guarantee that's going to happen. Depends what happens with the manager, doesn't it? There were rumours he was going to go yesterday, but that hasn't materialised. So we'll just have to wait and see. No, you're right. It's been a surrender, really. It's just went against everything we've seen in previous seasons. And it's so disappointing the way we finished last season on a high, but that sort of suggests that Sam Allardyce just had a spike in form, which kept us up against the odds, which has happened before, so I can understand where people are coming from with that. The escape under Gus Poyet in 2014 springs to mind, where we just put a mad run together at the end of the season. Last season wasn't really like that. Allardyce, after he struggled initially to get the players to do what he wanted, we ended up finishing, I think Sam had 30 games in charge and he picked up 36 points. In the last half of the season, he had 19 games, so half a season, he picked up 27 points. So it was a sustained improvement because we were rooted to the bottom of the table. And that was, you know, polar opposite of what we saw from Moyes. And that was Sam identifying who a squad and saying, what can we do to go out and get some points? What can I do with this bunch of players to go out and get some points? David Moyes has come in with one idea of how to play, one way only. He's been very rigid with it. This is how we're going to play. These players aren't good enough to do that. There's nothing I can do about it. There's been no effort to try and adapt his own belief or his own philosophy, if you like, to try and grind out some results, which to me makes him an extremely one-dimensional manager, and I just want him to leave, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only comments at the moment I've seen from him where he's saying, well, he's got a decision to make, which I don't know, strikes me as a strange way of looking at it, really. Is he sort of saying, well, I might be too good for the championship there? It's a funny attitude from a player who's looking like he's gonna take a club down by the bottom of the table.
It's mental, isn't it? And he's believing his own hype in a way. And how defensive he gets when he gets asked or gets confronted with difficult questions in the media. You know, I've got the third or fourth best Premier League win record in the Premier League and stuff. And you're like, where's the accountability? When he got asked why he didn't take the job before Allardyce, because he got offered the job before Sam Allardyce did. And he said, because I didn't think I would be able to keep them up from that point. Why are you in this industry if that's what you think? If you wouldn't take a Premier League job because you didn't think you could keep someone up. He's just shrugging his shoulders and scratching his head. With the exception of two games where he went three at the back to try to change things with mixed results, because one of those games we beat Palace 4-0. Besides that, He's not done anything differently, apart from stand and watch.
So
and conclude that the players aren't good enough. That's not good enough.
Yeah.
Do try something. Try and find a way. And the guy at Hull, Costa, hasn't helped him because he's come in with a side who looked worse than us. You know, Hull came up here early in the season. We beat them 3-0, and we were much better than them. And, you know, look at the job he's done there. Now, you're not expecting every manager to go in and have that impact. He's obviously got something about him. But at the same time, it's highlighted Moyes' failings. And this attitude that you mentioned, you know, the question you asked about how he's just absolved himself of all blame from it. He looks like he wants to be anywhere else but here.
It's interesting as well the way he does that, because I mean, if you look at it statistically, Sunderland were the only team in the bottom of the bottom struggling teams who didn't change their manager. And they were the first to go down. The only time in the Sunderland haven't changed a manager mid-season in the last seven or 8 years of relegation troubles, and they've gone down. So that kind of points to Moyes being kind of the worst manager you've probably had within this reign. I mean, where do you see him?
Yeah, no, I'll be honest. I think the way it's gone, I personally don't think you'll see the end of the season out.
Right.
Because I don't think some of them will get another point this season. We have Hull away on Saturday. Nothing from the form of those two sides suggests that's going to be anything other than a comfortable Hull victory.
Yeah.
But
it's Swansea straight after that, isn't it?
Exactly. And teams who were fighting. Well, a few weeks ago, you would have said, oh, we fancy these games because it's teams around you. That's, you know, has changed now, hasn't it? You know, we are gone. They are fighting for their lives. We aren't fighting against sides who have nothing to play for, never mind against sides who do have things to play for. We have Arsenal away, we have Chelsea away. We're not going to get another point, in my opinion. And I don't think Moyes can see that through. I think he's waiting for a payoff, personally. He doesn't look like he's going to resign, but it might just get untenable. And I think, just to divert it away from you, your question there, I think if he leaves before the end of the season, he's going to be remembered in Sunderland along the same levels of a guy called Laurie McMenemy, who was here, who is notorious for taking over Sunderland after he'd won the FA Cup with Southampton. He was a popular choice, like Moyes was, with the fans. He was from the area.
He doesn't say he's local, isn't he?
And he came to Sunderland when we were in the second tier, promised to get us up and into Europe. And what he did was sign a lot of old players, finished players who were internationals, spent a lot of money on wages, and oversaw us get relegated to the third tier for the one and only time in our history.
Wow.
And that is, you know, he's infamous in Sunderland, the name Laurie McMenemy. Some people have said I'm over egging that a little bit. I'm not so sure. I think he's going to be remembered. I think he's going to be remembered alongside him, to be honest, as far as the Le Mans has got. A lot of comparisons, overseeing a relegation by just... look, he hasn't had lots and lots of money. We'll acknowledge that.
Yeah.
But to drastically do it, to make a side worse from where they were last season, I'll just give you the stats with Allardyce there. It's bizarre. I can't get my head around it. His lack of imagination in the transfer market, his lack of imagination on the tactic front, we can get bogged down in tactics, can't we? In systems and styles and formations, and sometimes it's just whether a player believes in you as a person. Just coming out to the media every week and telling them how bad they are, basically, is what he's doing. And it was after the first game of the season, we played Man City away and we were unlucky to lose a last-minute goal. We played all right and we thought, you know, we're going to be okay this season. That was what people generally thought. Then we played Middlesbrough at home. And to be fair to Moyes, we had a ridiculous injury list for that game. He could barely put a team out. We lost 2-1 and even then we probably should have won the game. We were the better side. We lost to a wonder goal. After that game, fans were thinking, worrying a little bit, but we'll be okay when players start coming back. And that was when Moyes made his comment about, well, we're in a relegation battle. And it just put a massive, massive downer on everything. Everybody just went, just been on a downer ever since. A proper buzzkill effect.
Yeah.
And then after West Brom, a few games later, I think it was our first point of the season, or our second point of the season after about 8 games. And this West Brom were down there at the time, and they came up to the stadium like looking for a win. Now, when do West Brom go away from home looking for a win? That showed you their opinion of us as a side. And after the game, Moyes just sort of shrugged his shoulders and said, "Well, maybe that's the best I can get from this group of players." And then fast forward to the transfer window, he sells Arnold, so he has a little bit of money, disposable money there that he can go and sign a couple of players. not to be sniffed at. You know, I think Oviedo was like 5 million quid or something. And he had a little bit more because he wanted to sign a Joao for around 10 million. So he had more money there. So say a £15 million. That's not to be sniffed at, really, when you're a club like Sunderland in the position we are. And when he was asked about it, what was his response? Well, anybody would do bring in is probably not going to improve the team. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, you spent all season slaughtering the team, and then now suddenly there's kind of no one else either.
And then you slaughter any potential signing before he even comes. By saying, so you're a player who's thinking, I need a move this January, and then David Moyes and the people saying, well, the quality we bring in is not going to be very good. He's probably not going to improve our team. And you get a phone call the next day. Hiya, do you want to come and play for me at Sunderland? Come on.
Yeah, do you think he's just been too damaged by everything that's gone? Because he seems to be so solely interested in protecting himself now, and I don't think he was necessarily always like that. Do you think it's just in terms of the criticism he got at Manchester United and then the bad experiences in Spain?
That's what it seems like, Gibbo. But I mean, I'll be honest. You know, I only looked from the outside when he was at Everton. You would know more than me how he conducted himself at that period of time, because I can't really remember, if I'm being honest. It's not something that took a massive interest in. So if you're saying it's different for them...
Well, in terms of Everton, he was always a little bit... He used to limit their ambitions a little bit. And Evertonians used to get frustrated that, you know, they thought they could achieve more with the squad that, to be fair, he built. But he was always, this is the best we can do. This is the best we can do. And I think there was a little bit of that creeping in. And it was a bit of, you know, they were like, well, you know, he used to get frustrated with the mentality when they, you know, they never were, the derby record against under Moyes was appalling. And generally in big games. And there was idea amongst Evertonians that he was limiting the mentality a bit, but it wasn't the case of what we're seeing now, which is there's literally nothing I can do. You know, I might be the football manager, but you know, what do you expect me to do about any of this?
Yeah. What do you expect me to try and do for the million pound I'm earning?
Exactly.
It's bizarre, isn't it? But it's got people pining for Roy Keane, funnily enough.
Oh, wow. Really?
Which says everything, because it's never happened before. I think because he's the exact opposite of Roy Keane, suddenly people are looking for a time when they were happy, where Roy Keane, you thought anything, he was quite limited in certainly on the coaching field and places, but he made you feel 10 foot tall. Mm-hmm. And he come out and he was so bullish and he was so, you know, giving you confidence in we should be here. Sunderland are a club that should be here. Look at the history they've got. Look at the fan base. We need better. I deserve better. And I want better. And if you're not good enough to stay here, I'll go and find someone else. And he did it in a way that motivated and inspired. And I think that's why people are almost pining for him now.
And you talk about pining for ex-managers. It must be really tough to see what's happened at Crystal Palace as well, because obviously a big part of Sunderland's problems this season was all the messing around in the summer, and you didn't know what was happening with Allardyce and the thing with England caused. And that's so short, and then he rocks up at Crystal Palace, and yeah, there's a talented squad there, probably a bit more quality certainly going forward than is at Sunderland. But what he's been able to do there, that must be real frustrating for Sunderland fans, thinking, well, we had that manager and then, you know, we lost him for nothing in the end.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, it's right in front of your face, isn't it? It's like your partner ditching you and then moving a new fella in to live in the same house as you, isn't it? And doing it right in front of you. It is hard to take, and we have been unlucky in certain aspects. You know, like I say, had Roy Hodgson been able to beat Iceland, then perhaps we would have been.
I think lots of things would have been different if that had happened.
Yeah. But that's a massive knock-on effect, hasn't it? What's interesting is you do wonder, don't you? Moyes has clearly got the job off the back of his record at Everton.
Yeah.
Ellis Short has looked at the job he's done there and thought Sunderland should be at that kind of level. I think that's probably Everton, you know, in context, are probably a side that Sunderland fans look at and think, we would like to be there and we can't see why we couldn't be there. And I don't think that's an unrealistic place to expect to be with the history we've got and with the fan base we've got. However, is that enough? Should there be more responsibility on how managers get a job? For example, every single manager that's come into Sunderland has recruited poorly. to the point where we keep going back to the players like Catamol and O'Shea after like 5 years of really should be moving on from these kind of players. But it speaks volumes. The amount of millions wasted and spent time after time by successive managers. So at what point is there a responsibility for a chief exec or an owner to say to a manager, tell me what you do back to me now? Because if you sat down and you got a job interview for any other like big institution or organisation, you would be asked relevant questions. And I'd suggest that if Moyes walked in and said, oh, well, I can't keep this team up, I'm afraid, you wouldn't give him the job, would
no
you?
Way.
So, you know, at what point do you say, look, we're wasting too much money, tell me where you're going to strengthen this team, tell me what you're going to do with the team. The issue is, Ellis Shaw doesn't really know anything about football, so he could have said anything and probably bought it. Martin Bain, the guy, the chief exec we've got at the moment, does. But he's very, him and Moyes are very close.
Right.
Which is a big part of the reason he's still here at the moment. Whether that can last the test of time if Sunderland continue to lose games this season, I'm not sure.
So, looking to the future then, if the inevitable does happen and Moyes does manage to get out of there or be removed to make it more obvious, what direction would you like to see the club go in? I mean, are you looking at someone like a Rafa, a big name to attract better players, or are you looking at someone who's like a championship expert, like a, maybe a Mick McCarthy, or even like a younger manager like Sean Dyche or someone like that? Where would you like to see the club go in?
I certainly wouldn't go back to Mick McCarthy. I wasn't a big fan of
it. It was just an example of a guy who's done it before.
I know.
I was going to say Steve Bruce, but I thought that might get the same response.
Whether we could attract... Look, Moyes was supposed to be a big name for the context of where we were at the time. It's about the right manager. I'm not so sure a big name it needs to be. I think Sunderland fans, obviously, people are speaking about this amongst themselves because you do expect Moyes to go at some point. Jokanović at Fulham is a popular name that gets mentioned. Mm. Now, if he gets promoted with Fulham this season, you've got no chance, which could very likely happen because they look to me at the moment to be the informed team in that division. But he got Watford up and he's got Fulham playing well. He's also worked with Bain as well before.
Right, I see.
At the club in Greece, so Bain appointed him as a manager before, so there is that link there. Gary Monk being mentioned, because it looks like Leeds might be letting him go. I think people like the idea of the fact he's young, he's managed in the Premier League, he did okay in the Premier League as well. I think he was sacked very harshly, but he was at Swansea where he saw, you know, the way they built the club up, so he has an idea of how to build a club up. But also, even just falling short of the playoffs with Leeds, with the mess there at the moment, proves that he can work. He can work under those conditions.
He can work with one hand behind his back, basically.
yeah. But also the job he did at Swansea gives you enough hope to think that if he did get into the Premier League, he could do okay there as well. He's another popular one. I haven't seen people branch too far out from that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at what point do you say, okay, you don't go for the obvious choice? Look at Hull again, to reference Hull. And I mean, we all saw the ridiculous way that Merson and Phil Thompson reacted when he got the job there. Yeah, which was embarrassing to everybody. So it's out there. Do I trust that Ellis Short would be capable of going and finding somebody like that on the continent? Probably not. So I think you're kind of at the Monk are the two names that keep coming up in conversation when you speak to Sunderland fans at the moment.
Okay, huge thanks to Steve Goldsmith for joining us, you know, in his darkest moments as a Sunderland fan. But plenty of positives to come, I'm sure, and we'll have to get you on next season, mate. But all the best. And first, now, back to the studio.
Three that still in contention for the drop. And Steve Goldsmith, Sunderland feel like a bit of a gift for them, don't they, at this stage?
They do, but the problem that Hull have got is the Swansea have got them as well, so it's a gift for both of them.
Are they away to them, Swansea?
That'll still be playing on Hull's mind. I mean, I think maybe more for Swansea, they were hoping that the Sunderland are still having to pay for it. I mean, just off the subject, it was
you know, listening to Steve talk about something there, you're looking at four games, you know, to have at this stage of the season that they had, you know, Middlesbrough, Bournemouth, Hull and Swansea, and they couldn't even get, you know, to the end of those, you know what I mean?
That life raft.
Yeah, exactly. And then they just went, no, we'll just lose the first two. I mean, it's absolutely pathetic, isn't it? And the fans deserve much, much better up there. But yeah, it's a nice one for Hull. If you're looking at their home form's pretty good there, and especially has been under this manager who doesn't lose home games wherever he is. Maybe get him in for the Champions League next season. But, since he took over, the Silver, there's been very, very strong at home, and you can't see how it doesn't continue here. You know, Sunderland have approached relegation in the most pathetic way, really, and I don't see that changing now they're down.
Mo, I mean, from Hull's point of view, these are points they should take, but they must take, because they've got to go away to Palace and then they're at home to Spurs on the last day. These may be the last points they take this season.
Very well could be. Personally, I think Chelsea might have wrapped the title before the last game, in which case the game against Spurs does become a little bit easier, but they'll still be keen to avoid last season when they lost 5-1 against Newcastle on the last day of the season.
Yeah.
So they're not going to completely switch off. I think regarding them both playing Sunderland, I think it's even, simply because I think for Swansea, going to the stadium alight is not going to be bad, because there's going to be such an atmosphere of anger towards Sunderland that I think is actually going to work in Swansea's favour. So I think being a home away doesn't really make a difference in that score.
Adam, Swansea, they've got Everton at home this weekend, and then they've got Sunderland away and West Brom at home. Given Hull's banker this weekend, and how the rest of Hull's games play out, you feel Swansea are going to need to win two of those three.
Yeah.
And you see them doing it. Two of those three might just do it for them. Everton at home, Sunderland away, West Brom at home. If Sunderland away is a bank, and I don't think any away game in the Premier League ever is that, can they be either Everton or West Brom at home?
Yes, I think so. I mean, neither of those teams have really got anything to play for, particularly. Koeman obviously playing for his Barcelona job, but you know, they aren't really going for anything. West Brom are fine; they're the usual, you know, 40-point mark, and then flip flops on. So, but I don't. It's not a gift for either Hull or Swansea that Sunderland are down. They're a rubbish team. They're relegated because they're rubbish. So they won't have been going, oh, you know, thank God they're gone, now we've got a chance against them. They'd be looking at that and thinking we should be battering them anyway because they're not good. So I think it's. It looks probably easier for Hull because a home game, last day of the season, if you've got something to play for, and if Mo's right that Spurs have got nothing to play for, we saw last season how as soon as the title went, Spurs kind of fell apart a little bit, you know, the last two, three games, whatever it was. I think, so you would, if you put a gun to my head right now and said who's staying up, I'd probably say Hull. But Everton have got to go to Swansea, and, you know, as I say, West Brom got nothing to play for. You could easily see them picking up 5-6 points from those games, and it's actually quite exciting. You know, it's actually like for the sort of last one place, because you have to fancy that Middlesbrough are gone. So for the last one place, there's actually something going into it. Maybe the last day of the season, it might be one of those days where there's a bit of drama and you're actually keeping an eye on the scores of all the games at the same time to see what's going to happen, which hasn't happened for a while. It feels like it's all been really predictable.
Well, we're writing Middlesbrough off roundly. Let's just go. I'm going to go around the room and say who you think's going to go down with Middlesbrough. Sam, Hull or Swansea going down for you?
Hull for me.
A Hull from Sam. Mo.
First of all, I want to say that I actually think they're both unlucky, because I do think that both of them have played in patches well enough to have survived.
Since Christmas.
Yeah, I think whoever does go down will kind of have a justified feeling a little bit unlucky. I think it will be Swansea, but I think it will be very close.
Adam, one each. One vote for Hull, one for Swansea. You can near Kingmaker. We've got to go to John yet, but it's tanks in the room.
Thumbs up or thumbs down for the... I think that I am going to say that Hull will stay up.
Whoa. Two Hulls to a Swansea.
Exciting.
John.
It's going to be really tight, and I think it's going to go down to goal difference, you know. And I think Hull will probably just do enough against Sunderland to see them through on goal difference. I think that's probably how it'll be. It might just be like one goal between it, because it's really, really tight, isn't it? So it's going to be incredibly tight, but I think I'll go for Hull on goal difference.
Can I just say, on the final game of the season, is one of my favourite things when... on Match of the Day, they show one match, and in the top corner, they show the other match.
I thought you were going to say it. When they've got a fella in the crowd with an earpiece on. Oh, yeah.
The Raiders. That spreads through the crowd. Yeah. Yeah.
That is great, isn't it? I love it. Yeah.
Well, what do we think about this 39th game that's been mooted earlier today? Have you heard about
it? It never happens, does it? There's always a scenario where it might have.
Playoffs, you mean, if everything's tied?
Goal difference, goal scored.
At both ends of the league they're talking about.
No, this is mainly between Hull and Swansea.
The Liverpool, Man City is a possibility, though. They might have to as well.
Hasn't the score got to be something? Man City are going to win like 9-0 in one game and draw 5-5 in another or something like that to make it a realistic thing.
I think this one's a little bit more likely than that. But hey, who knows?
Oh, I'll tell you what. Try and keep me away from that one. Well,
play it in Dubai.
Well, hey, kids, it's going to be an exciting weekend of Premiership football again. Match day 36, I think it is. It's been great talking to Sam Walkerdine, to Mo, to Adam, and to John Gibbons. This has been 50...
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.